Abounding. Quachit. Sometimes. Translation, those who are situated in the mode of goodness act piously according to Vedic injunctions, thus they are elevated to the higher planetary system of the demigods, but those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subjected to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. Wherefore, there are three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. Those influenced by the mode of goodness are given places in the upper planetary systems, Brahmaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, Mahaloka. Those influenced by the mode of passion are given places in the Bhurloka and Bhuvarloka. Those who are situated in the mode of ignorance are given places in Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala, or the animal kingdom. Qualitatively, the living entity is the same as the Supreme Personality of God, and because of his forgetfulness, he gets different bodies in different planetary systems. At the present moment, human society is overly influenced by the mode of passion, and consequently, people are engaged in working in big factories. They forget how distressful it is to live in such places. In Bhagavad Gita, such activities are described as ugra karma, that is, distressful activities. Those who utilize the energies of the worker are called capitalists, and those who actually perform the work are called laborers. In actuality, they're both capitalists and the workers in the mode of passion and ignorance. The result is that there is always a distressful situation. In contrast with these men who are influenced by the mode of goodness, in contrast to these men are those influenced by the mode of goodness, the karmis, and jhanis. Time is in the direction of Vedic instructions try to elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. The jnanis try to merge into the existence of Brahman, the universal feature of the Lord. In this way, all classes of living entities and various species of life are existing within this material world. This explains superior and inferior life forms within the material world. However, by the mode of ignorance, in the material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a unit, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. Therefore, accordingly, actually, the living entity is part and parcel of the Lord, therefore, he is spiritual quality. The living entity is never material, and his material conception is simply a mistake of forgetfulness. He is as brilliant as the Supreme Personality of God. Both the sun and sunshine are very brilliant. So it is like the full shining sun and the living entity, and like the small particles of that sun which constitute the all-pervasive sunshine. When these small particles are covered by the cloud of Maya, they lose their shining capacity. When the cloud of Maya is gone, the particles again become brilliant and shining. As soon as the living entity is covered by the ignorance of Maya or darkness, he cannot understand his relationship with the Supreme God. Somehow or other, if he comes before the Lord, he can see himself as shining as the Supreme Lord, although he is not as extensive as the Lord. Because the living entity desires to imitate the Supreme Lord discovered by Maya, we cannot imitate the Lord, nor can we become the Supreme Enjoyer. This is not possible, and when we think it is, we become conditioned by Maya. Thus, the engagement of the living entity on the touch of the Maya is brought about by forgetfulness of the relationship with the Supreme Lord. Under the influence of Maya, the living entity becomes exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. Such a person speaks all kinds of nonsense. When the living entity is covered by the influence of Maya, he becomes a so-called scientist, philosopher, politician, or socialist, and at every moment presents different plans for the benefit of human society. All these plans are ultimately failed because they are illusory. In this way, the living entity forgets his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He instead becomes a servant of Maya. In any case, he remains a servant. It is his misfortune that by forgetting his real contact with the Supreme Lord, he becomes a servant of Maya. As a servant of Maya, he sometimes becomes a king, sometimes an ordinary citizen, sometimes a brahmana, a sudra, and so on. Sometimes he's a happy man, sometimes a prosperous man, sometimes a small insect. Sometimes he's in heaven, and sometimes in hell. Sometimes he is a demigod, and sometimes he's a demon. Sometimes he's a servant, sometimes he's a master. In this way, the living entity wanders all over the universe. Only when he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position, and then becomes disgusted with material existence. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence. This regret is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditional life. He then prays to the Lord to engage in a service, by that time Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. Lord Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. Only by the grace of Krishna can one get out of the clutches of Maya. It is not possible to get up by mental speculation or other activities. When living entity understands the real position by the grace of Krishna, he keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness and acts accordingly. Thus he gradually becomes free from the clutches of Maya. When he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya cannot touch him. In this way, in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, the living entity can get free from the contamination of material existence. In this connection, Sri Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, Tati Krishna Bhaje Kore Guru Sevana Maya Jolakate Pai Krishna Charana. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. And this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness act piously according to Vedic conjunctions, thus they are elevated to the higher planetary systems of the demigods. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subjected to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. However, by the mode of ignorance and material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within this material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. So here we see the explanation of the wandering of the jiva in the material world. The previous verse mentioned the modes of material nature and how the living entity must act within the gunas in the material world. Since the material world is made of gunas, and the body is made of gunas, the senses are made of gunas, everything is made of gunas. However, the gunas are changeable. That doesn't mean they are also haphazard. Different objects have innate gunas, or prominent gunas in them, though they may change sometimes. And similarly, the human being has some innate gunas. These are also changeable. But unlike those in the material world, the human being, by his actions and his decisions, he can actually begin to change his own gunas. This cannot take place in others. It's a haphazard existence for the other objects in the world. But the human being can change gunas. How can he do that? If he chooses to live in one place rather than another, one place may have sattva gunas, another place may have tamagunas. So if he chooses a tamagun place, then he also is influenced by that. Or if he chooses sattva, then he's influenced by that. So in other words, gunas influence things. So one object, one guna influences another object, whatever. And this is particularly true of the human being. He is influenced by the gunas one way or the other according to contact with the gunas. So if he chooses to contact tamaguna, then he gets that influence. If he chooses sattva guna, he gets that influence. Similarly, if we eat tamasic food, we become tamasic. If we eat sattvic food, we become sattvic. So there are many choices in the material world by which we can alter the gunas. Now, of course, as I said, by birth we may have gunas also. That's some certain qualities innate in a human being by his birth. Nevertheless, we can modify this by choices we make. Of course, we can also argue that the choices themselves will be influenced by the gunas, because our mind may be in tamaguna by nature or rajaguna or whatever. So yes, there is some limitation. But nevertheless, there is some possibility of alteration or at least some modification of gunas by choice. That is why we have rules and regulations. By rules and regulations, we can begin to alter gunas. So we have systems like Varnashram system. And it's a slow process of alteration, but gradually it works. And at least it prevents living entities from degrading. So everybody follows those rules within the system, and gradually they elevate birth after birth. So this is the this is one system of stabilizing gunas in the human being. It's a slow process, but nevertheless, it works. So here it mentions that those who are in the sattvic mode, which means sukla here, means white, means sattva gun, they go to heavenly planets, higher planetary systems, with illumination. Prakasha means knowledge, actually. And the quality of sattva gun is prakasha, which means illumination, which means knowledge. So higher knowledge. So they can begin to understand the nature of Atma, etc. So they go to the upper planets. Those who are affected by the mode of passion, they go to places which are distressful. And those who are influenced by darkness, they go to places which are full of lamentation. So according to our gunas and our actions that we do in the gunas, which will produce certain gunas in us, we will get different destinations, which are characterized by sattva, rajas, and tamas. If we do sattvic activities, we get sattvic results. If we do tamasic activities, we get tamasic results. So our loka is tamasic if we do tamasic activities, and sattvic if we get sattvic activities. So in this way, our future is determined by the type of activities we do. Which are in the gunas. So if we want a good destination, then we have to choose very carefully what activities to do. As I said, generally even our choices are influenced, because in tamagun we don't really utilize our choice very well. So that is why in the varnashram system the choice is not given to the sudra as much, and therefore without choice they follow the system and they elevate. If they make their own choices, then they go the opposite way. Haphazardly, they'll just end up making wrong choices and degrading rather than elevating. So therefore, we have these rules to follow, and by this, gradually, there's some elevation. So this is one system. And the other system, as I mentioned yesterday, was the system of bhakti. So this system destroys the gunas completely. It takes one beyond the gunas. So not even sattva guna, but rather nirguna. One enters a nirguna state through the process of bhakti. And the reason is, bhakti itself is nirguna. It is beyond the gunas. And these other processes like varna, ashram, and jnana, and yoga are within the gunas. So yes, they can stabilize you within the gunas, but they can't take you beyond. So bhakti can take a person beyond the gunas. Therefore, anyone in any guna, if they take to the process of bhakti, then they get some very, very wonderful results. So, of course, one may say, well, people take their devotional service, but they don't look like they're beyond the gunas. They're still in the gunas. But it's explained that even chanting the holy name accidentally has the power to destroy one's karmas. So in the case of Ajamil, the first time he named his son Narayana, simply saying the name Narayana destroyed all of his karmas. And therefore, when he died, even if he did not chant the name of his son after that point, still, he could not get punished by the Yamadutas, because his karmas were destroyed. So they couldn't touch him, simply because of that first chanting accidentally of the name. So, if one chants accidentally and gets such a result, one gets a better result with faith. If one chants with faith, much better. Of course, we can argue, well, Ajamil didn't look like he was beyond the gunas, because after he named his son Narayan, he still continued to be attached to the prostitute and still did sinful activities. So, looks like he was still in tamagun. So the answer is that we cannot contradict Shastra. So if Shastra says this, we have to believe it is true, that the karmas are all gone. So then, what is this? What is Ajamil doing? It is an appearance only. It is not actually that he is stuck in the modes anymore. But bhakti itself sometimes will not show the immediate result that it gives. It will hide the results. So therefore, it looks as if he was still the same person. So that, of course, is simply the result of bhakti, that it hides the results of its, for the process. In this way, it does not discourage the other processes. So it hides its own potency. But nevertheless, the result was shown ultimately when Ajamil was taken to the by the Yamadutas, and they could not touch him. And then he came back to life again. So the result was already there, but it didn't look like it because of the actions he was doing after that point. So that we cannot consider. So that is considered to be like the all the actions he did after that point had no actual result upon him, even if he did sinful activities. They were not real sins. So that is compared to the snake with no teeth, and if he bites, there's no poison. So similarly, Ajamil continued to do activities that looked like they were sinful activities, but he didn't get any result from them. It didn't affect him in any way. So this is the glory of the name of the Lord and bhakti in general. He does this. So therefore, one should not underestimate the power of the Lord's name. What to speak of actual devotional service. This is accidental chanting of the name. So if one chants with faith, obviously one can have a better result. The only obstacle, of course, is that the process will not take place so quickly if there are aparadhas involved. So if one commits aparadhas, we don't get that quick result. In the case of Ajamil, he didn't have any aparadhas. He didn't think one way or the other about the Lord. So he didn't think of him as Maya. He didn't think offensively of the Lord, whatever. He just chanted the name of the Lord as his son. So he got very good results. So if we have aparadha, on the other hand, then we don't get the same results. We have to go through a more gradual process of destroying karmas, etc. So, in any case, this is a process which acts in any guna. Ajamil was in tamaguna, and then he chanted the name and destroyed his karmas or whatever. And went beyond the gunas ultimately by taking to the process of bhakti consciously later on. So, therefore, bhakti in itself is complete. It does not depend on other processes for purification. So we shouldn't think that previous to bhakti we must do this or that. Ultimately, bhakti will take care of everything for the devotee. So the jivas are wandering around in the material world according to gunas. And it is very difficult once one is caught in that network of gunas and karma. We can never expend all of the karma because we continually do more activities. Karma is an adi without beginning. So we have piles of karmas which we can never exhaust. So this pushes us from body to body to body. Meanwhile, we do more karmas in the gunas and we get more guna results and we end up in different places. So this way we wander the material world from body to body. We wander in upper planets, middle planets, and lower planets. We wander in different species of life, and the man body, woman body, etc. All this because we're being pushed by the gunas and karma, desires, etc. All mixed together, we get results which put bodies on us and give us new bodies in the material world. And it's difficult to get out once that is done. So the processes are here, different processes, but ultimately the most effective process is bhakti. Well, it depends. You can chant with aparadha.
also accidentally, so that will have very little effect. If we have faith and we chant with aparad, actually the faith gives us more effect. Because it's not accidental at that point. We may just chant once accidentally. Whereas with faith we're chanting constantly. And we may have some aparad. Of course it also depends on the type of aparad and the extent of aparad as well. But if we chant consciously with faith, then eventually the aparads themselves will dissipate. It is a type of aparad also. We have the, you know, das aparads, and lack of attention is one of them. But the serious aparad is the Vaishnava aparad. That's the serious one.
Yeah, if
we have inattention in the sense of we cannot, we don't even give regard to the rules and regulations or whatever, ultimately, then it leads to everything else in that sense.
When the Varnashram, the Shudras are not given opportunity, they are being dictated and they just follow. Similarly, the spiritual master instructs a disciple. So if the disciple, without any deviating the spiritual master, he is also taken out of the Varnashram.
Of course, the disciples are in a slightly different position because it is said that the disciple has to ask questions. The sutra generally doesn't ask questions, he just follows. So the disciple actually asks questions and gets answers to that. So he is inquisitive.
You say the very thought of enjoyment is, for a living entity, is a demonic intention. Being in the material world, the very thought of enjoyment in the material world by a living entity itself is demonic.
Well, it leads to existence in the material world. In other words, that is forgetfulness of the Lord in itself. So it keeps us in the material world. But it could be sattvic also, because even in sattva one has desire for enjoyment. So not necessarily demonic. It could be an adiguna.
One may have faith in Krishna, but he may not be taking up to the cause of chanting the Maha Mantra. He may be chanting some other mantras.
Which mantras?
Like maybe they are chanting Narayana, Kudapuram, or something like Parakriyam,
the Arvada. It's the name of the Lord, then they get a result for them also. Ajami will chant the name of Narayana.
In any condition, a living entity is always a servant, either being a servant of Maya or being a servant of Krishna. And most of the jivas in the existence we see, seem to be that being a servant of Krishna, not a servant of Maya. Even though after taking to Krishna consciousness, it becomes not so easy to become a true servant of the Lord. Why is it?
We have the process where we go through different stages from Shraddha to Prema. So in that process, gradually the material attraction is decreasing and the attraction to this Krishna is increasing. That's all. So it's only a matter of the process of transformation from one type of enjoyment to the other.
கட் பண்ணுங்க ಕೊಟ್ಟಿರುತ್ತದೆ.